That night was the most terrible time in all the memory of Galasat. When the fateful day had dawned, the tribe numbered 42 men, counting those who were too old to fight. When night came and the women had carried back to the village those who had died on the beach of Coral Cove, there remained only 15. Of these, 7 were old men. There was no woman who had not lost a father or a husband, a brother or a son. The storm lasted 2 days, and the 3rd day we buried our dead on the south headland. The Aleuts who had fallen on the beach we burned. For many days after that, the village was quiet. People went out only to gather food and came back to eat in silence. Some wished to leave and go in their canoes to the island called Santa Catalina, which lies far off to the east. But others said that there was little water on that island. In the end, a council was held, and it was decided to stay at Galasat. The council also chose a new chief to take my father's place. His name was Kimke. He was very old, but he had been a good man in his youth and a good hunter. The night he was chosen to be chief, he called everyone together, saying, "Most of those who snared fowl and found fish in the deep water and built canoes are gone. The women, who were never asked to do more than stay at home, cook food, and make clothing, now must take the place of the men and face the dangers which abound beyond the village. There will be grumbling in Galasat because of this. There will be shirkers. These will be punished, for without the help of all must perish." Kimke portioned work for each one in the tribe, giving Ulap and me the task of gathering abalones. This shellfish grew on the rocks along the shore and was plentiful. We gathered them at low tide in baskets and carried them to the mesa, where we cut the dark red flesh from the shell and placed it on flat rocks to dry in the sun. Ramo had the task of keeping the abalones safe from the gulls, and especially the wild dogs. Dozens of our animals, which had left the village when their owners had died, joined the wild pack that roamed the island. They soon grew as fierce as the wild ones and only came back to the village to steal food. Each day toward evening, Ulap and I helped Ramo put the abalones in baskets and carry them to the village for safekeeping. During this time, other women were gathering the scarlet apples that grow on the cactus bushes and are called tunas. Fish were caught and many birds were netted. So hard did the women work that we really fared better than before when the hunting was done by the men. Life in the village should have been peaceful, but it was not. The men said that the women had taken the tasks that rightfully were theirs, and now that they had become hunters, the men looked down upon them. There was much trouble over this until Kimke decreed that the work would again be divided. Henceforth, the men would hunt and the women harvest. Since there was already ample food to last through the winter, it no longer mattered who hunted. But this was not the real reason why autumn and winter were unpeaceful in Galasat. Those who had died at Coral Cove were still with us. Everywhere we went on the island or on the sea, whether we were fishing or eating or sitting by the fires at night, they were with us. We all remembered someone, and I remembered my father, so tall and strong and kind. A few years ago, my mother had died, and since then, Ulap and I had tried to do the tasks she had done, Ulap even more than I, being older. Now that my father was gone, it was not easy to look after Ramo, who was always into some mischief. It was the same in the other houses of Galasat, but more than the burdens which had fallen upon us all, it was the memory of those who had gone that burdened our hearts. After food had been stored in autumn and the baskets were full in every house, there was more time to think about them, so that a sort of sickness came over the village, and people sat and did not speak, nor ever laughed. In the spring, Kimke called the tribe together. He had been thinking, he said, during the winter, and had decided that he would take a canoe and go to the east to a country which was there, and which he had once been to when he was a boy. It lay many days across the sea, but he would go there and make a place for us. He would go alone because he could not spare more of our men for the voyage, and he would return. The day that Khimki left was fair. We all went to the cove and watched him launch the big canoe. It held 2 baskets of water and enough tunas and dried abalone to last many days. We watched while Khimki paddled through the narrow opening in the rocks. Slowly he went through the kelp beds and into the sea. There he waved to us, and we waved back. The rising sun made a silver trail across the water. Along this trail, he disappeared into the east. The rest of the day, we talked about the journey. Would Khimki ever reach this far country about which nothing was known? Would he come back before the winter was over? Or never? That night, we sat around the fire and talked while the wind blew and the waves crashed against the shore.